Hello, it's Monday the 2nd of March. I'm John Dennis. Today, the government may go as far as changing the law to deprive the failed banking boss Fred Goodwin of his big fat pension.
The government may be prepared to legislate to grab part of the pension back from him.
Also today, top diplomats discuss rebuilding Gaza, but they want to bypass Hamas and Israeli border controls.
However much money is pledged at this reconstruction conference, not a lot is going to change on the ground in Gaza until these crossings are opened.
And as anxious parents wait to find out whether their children have been accepted by their secondary school of choice, a Guardian survey finds out the extent of voters' disillusionment with the admissions system. But first, here's Sandy Waugh with the news headlines and a look at the papers.
International donors are meeting in Egypt to discuss what it'll cost to rebuild Gaza after the Israel attack in January. It's estimated 21,000 homes were destroyed in the fighting, and the leader of the Palestinian Authority is asking for about £2 billion. 75 countries are expected to attend, including the USA, which is expected to offer more than £500,000. We'll have a full story shortly. North Korea and the UN command in South Korea have begun the first military talks in 6 years. There's been an increase in tension on the border between the two Koreas over the past 3 months. The North said it will test another missile and has warned UN troops against provocation, claiming incursions across the border into the demilitarized zone. Gordon Brown flies to Washington later for his first meeting with President Obama. The Prime Minister said after the European summit in Brussels that he was taking a clear message that Europe wanted a global grand bargain to solve the world recession. But the European summit ended with continuing disagreement. Many were suspicious that France's plan to support the car industry was protectionist and threatened the working of the single market. The summit also refused a request from Eastern European members for help with the bank bailout. The British general who's standing down this week as deputy commander in Iraq has told The Guardian that al-Qaeda has been largely defeated. In an exclusive interview, Lieutenant General John Cooper admitted there was still a long way to go, but democracy was firmly rooted in the country. Cricket and the West Indies look like they forced a draw in the test after declaring for 749 in answer to England's already massive total of 600. Sarwan hit a magnificent 291. In football, Manchester United beat Spurs to win the Carling Cup final, but only in a penalty shootout. It was thanks to young English goalkeeper Ben Foster, who saved a crucial Spurs attempt. That's the main story on most sports pages. The Guardian quotes Alex Ferguson hailing his goalkeeper Foster as being the England first choice now. Several papers tell us how they think he won the game for Man U. Pod of gold, says the Express, and the iPod hero is the way the Mail puts it. Over stories, the goalie was looking at film of Spurs players shooting penalties on his iPod with his coach just before the shootout. On the front pages, The Guardian and the Financial Times talk about the HSBC Bank's troubles, which will try to raise £12 billion in a rights issue. The FT believes the company will cut back on finance for the American consumer market. The Guardian reports the chief executive will waive his bonuses. The Times and The Telegraph focus on the European summit, both talking about a new iron curtain splitting Europe. The Times writes that Eastern European countries gave an apocalyptic warning of hordes of unemployed workers heading west unless the EU agrees to bail out the eastern economies. Finally, The Sun and The Mirror both put Jade Goody on the front pages. She's rushed to hospital again, only days after her marriage. More on the day's news and breaking stories at guardian.co.uk.
The Deputy Labour leader, Harriet Harman, has increased the pressure on Sir Fred Goodwin to return his £693,000 a year pension. The former chief executive of the Royal Bank of Scotland has refused to waive the payment. He says he's legally entitled to it, and it was approved by the government. David Henke is in our Westminster office.
Basically, she said he shouldn't count on getting it, and it might be enforceable in the courts, but it's not enforceable in as far as public opinion is concerned. And basically, it's being interpreted is that if he says, no, I'm not going to return any more money at all, the government may be prepared to legislate to grab part of the pension back from him, which would be pretty unprecedented, actually.
I mean, it is quite incredible. I mean, do you think they'll go further and legislate to claw back, you know, bonuses paid to other banking executives?
Yes, yes, they could. I mean, the government couldn't introduce a sort of Sir Fred Goodwin pension clawback bill because that would be, you know, discriminating against an individual and the misuse of Parliament. What they could do is introduce a wider bill that basically will tackle actually all major bonuses in state control. Banks and make it illegal for them to get actually these sort of levels of bonuses, and that's what obviously they're looking at.
David, there's another story that you've been working on that I'd like to ask you about, if I may, and that's about the privatisation, or the part privatisation, of the Royal Mail. And it turns out, looking at this bill, that the government could privatise more than we had thought.
Yes, that's absolutely true. Until now, it's been mainly thought that TNT want to buy 30%, and people assumed, oh, well, the bill will probably say 30%. The bill says nothing of the sort. It actually gives permission to sell up to 49.9%, so that although it remains in public ownership, it only has to just remain in public ownership. And frankly, the Tories have already spotted this, and this is why they're backing the bill, because if they win the next general election, the government will have passed legislation which, if they wanted to, they could sell nearly another 20% of the Royal Mail off.
And rival communication companies may be interested to learn that they may have to pay for a universal postal service as part of this bill.
Yes, the hidden in the schedules is a massive change to the regulation of the postal services, based on the fact that if it's part privatised, there has to be a proper, powerful external regulator. And they are proposing to give Ofcom, who would take this role on, wide-ranging powers to basically charge, or find a way of charging, rival competitors to the Royal Mail to contribute, so they can get contributions to maintain a universal postal services. And the actual wording just used rival communications, and it is not being denied, if I asked about it, that internet companies who provide emails might even be asked to contribute to this with it as a proportion within the UK, and it basically leaves the regulator to decide how they want to do this.
David Henke. And there's full coverage at guardian.co.uk/politics. Also on The Guardian's website today, we begin a week-long series of recipe swaps. The historian Simon Sharma shares his recipe for cheese souffle. I tried his ragu recipe once and it was very delicious, actually. And you can tell us your culinary secrets on our food blog at guardian.co.uk/word of mouth. Our art critic Jonathan Jones picks his 5 favourite exhibits at the British Museum at guardian.co.uk/art. And Spring Shots, you can share your photos of spring and win a camera at guardian.co.uk/environment. Hillary Clinton is among the senior diplomats in Egypt today for a conference aimed at raising money to rebuild Gaza after the Israeli attacks in January. Tony Blair paid his first visit to Gaza as envoy of the Quartet, that's the US, the EU, Russia and the UN, as was the British International Development Secretary Douglas Alexander. He pledged £30 million to help rebuild Gaza's infrastructure. The Guardian's Middle East correspondent, Rory McCarthy, spoke to me from Gaza on the Israeli border. I asked him what the conference might achieve.
The Palestinian Authority are going to present their demand. They want $2.8 billion US dollars, which they say is necessary, to rebuild Gaza after Israel's 3-week war there in January. It seems clear that a lot of money will be pledged for the future of Gaza. But the problem is that Israel is maintaining its blockade of the Gaza Strip, which means however much money is pledged, it's still impossible at this stage to send into Gaza the sorts of materials that will be needed to rebuild people's homes and businesses. Things like concrete, glass, metal are all excluded at the moment. None of that can go in. So however much money is pledged at this reconstruction conference, not a lot is going to change on the ground in Gaza until these crossings are opened.
Now, you're in Gaza as we speak, Rory. What do people there think about this conference?
Well, I think everyone wants to see an improvement in their lives. The situation in Gaza at the moment is very bleak. About 30,000 homes were either partially or completely destroyed during the war. And the situation for some people is really very dire. I don't think, however, that people are particularly confident that a lot is going to change. I think they're grateful that major, you know, high-level international diplomats are now paying Gaza attention. For example, Tony Blair, the Middle East envoy, came to Gaza on Sunday. That was his first visit as Middle East envoy. Douglas Alexander, the British International Development Secretary, also came. That was the first time a British government minister has visited Gaza since Hamas took control of the Strip in 2007. So I think people are sort of optimistic because of these visits, but they're still waiting to see some change on the ground.
Now, the World Bank says it'll help channel some of these funds to the Palestinian Authority and to independent groups, but not to Hamas.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the whole problem here is that the international community is ready and willing to give money, but extremely concerned to make sure that money does not go through Hamas, and does not strengthen Hamas, and does not in any way legitimize Hamas. And this is, you know, at the heart of the problem. The Palestinian Authority is based in Ramallah, largely dominated by Fatah, the political faction that's a rival to Hamas. They say that on behalf of the Palestinian people and the future of a Palestinian nation, this money is needed for reconstruction. But it's quite clear that so far Hamas will be excluded unless at some stage Hamas and Fatah, the two main Palestinian political factions, can come together and forge some kind of agreement and produce some kind of unity government. They're working on that at the moment, but they've been working on it for a couple of years now, and it still seems to me at least a long way off.
Hillary Clinton is attending the Donors Summit. It's her first visit to the Middle East in her new role as the US Secretary of State. She's also going to be meeting Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister designate. What's on their agenda?
Quite a sensitive time in Israel at the moment, because although Mr. Netanyahu has been chosen to try and form a governing coalition, he's not yet prime minister and he hasn't yet got his coalition together. But I think that Mrs. Clinton will be pushing him to stick to the commitments that have already been made in the past and to pursue a two-state solution with the Palestinians. Netanyahu himself has stopped short of talking about a two-state solution. He's leader of the right-wing Likud party. They're quite supportive of the Jewish settlement enterprise in the occupied West Bank. And I think he will have his own interests that he will want to protect. I think he is going to talk in particular about Iran. He's very concerned about Iran's nuclear ambitions. And for him, that is the priority.
Rory McCarthy. I'm John Dennis. Still to come in Guardian Daily, book lovers enjoy a giveaway bonanza as thousands descend on a warehouse in search of free treasures.
Frank McCourt, Tiz. Jacques Lussier LP, Mary Wilson poems, Michael Palin book, Terry Wogan book.
But first, thousands of families find out this week which secondary school their child has secured a place for in September. But an ICM poll for The Guardian reveals that 44% of people with school-aged children don't believe the admissions system gives pupils a fair chance. Education editor Polly Curtis has the details.
People don't think it gives every child an equal, fair chance to get into a good local school. We can't kind of tell what people's reasoning was that, but there's two basic reasons why people don't think there's a fair chance. And one might be that the admissions system is unfair, and the other might be that there aren't enough good schools to go around, which is also backed up by another question we asked about standards in schools, and 60% of people said that they think standards are falling in schools.
What about attitudes to private schools?
Well, one in four people would like to see them abolished. Not surprisingly, the more wealthy people are, the less likely they are to think that, which probably says that they went to a private school themselves. It's quite a strong kind of vote of lack of confidence in the current private state school system if it's one in four think they should be completely abolished.
And what about faith schools? What do they think of them?
Actually, they're quite, I was surprised at how supportive, considering that the minority of people are in faith schools. People are very supportive of them. Around 60% of people think that having an element of faith education is a positive thing. But if you ask parents, that goes up to 69%. Showing that people who really know about these things, about their children's education, do value it.
And how is the government responding to these concerns that we've highlighted in this poll?
They slightly preempted them by yesterday announcing that they are going to review the lottery system for admissions, and that's when there are too many people applying for too few places are allocated by a lottery. So that's going to be reviewed. And they're also going to review the situation whereby twins are being split up and sent to separate schools. And the whole kind of thinking behind that seems to be to kind of, you know, acknowledge these concerns of parents about the fairness in the system.
For thousands of parents, it's a very anxious time this week, of course. What's the competition for places like this year?
It's a very, very mixed picture depending where you are. We've been polling all through the end of last week and through this weekend local authorities to find out what proportion of people have got their first, second, third or no choice of school. And in a lot of areas, people are actually going to be quite happy because the number of 11-year-olds is actually dropping this year, which means there's less pressure on school places and more people are going to get their first choice. But then when you look at the pockets, the hotspots around the country where there's a really fierce competition for schools, where the birth rate is rising and because people are moving into those areas for schools in West London, in grammar school areas, in the South East, there you see kind of more intense competitions for schools, places than ever.
Polly Curtis. Books. About 5 million of them are being given away free to book lovers. Everything from books on computing to literary classics occupy a warehouse the size of an aircraft hangar, which was abandoned by the firm that rented the space. Ashley Nicholson is a director of Verve, the company that owns the warehouse site in Bristol.
It seemed a crime to them to go into a skip, and we thought it would be much better if, you know, someone could get the benefits of these things, you know, whether they're, you know, individuals or charities or anyone else who could benefit from something for free. It was quite a happy atmosphere down there, quite a carnival. It's really good that the old-fashioned tradition of reading rather than internet is good to hear. And obviously there was quite a wide variety of everything down there for people, all kinds of things.
The Guardian's Stephen Morris spoke to some of the bibliophiles and traders who were taking advantage of the offer.
So I worked for a company called Renegade Books in Tottenham, and I was about to go about my usual rounds, and I thought, oh, hell, I'll head up to Bristol and pick up some books from up there.
And so what have you got here in your van? This is a transit van, is it?
Yes.
Is
that
what, so you've driven it straight into the warehouse, and now you're loading it with what?
Well, yeah, I'm loading it with books and bookshelves. Yeah, I came up here yesterday, so I got here about 4 o'clock, and of course it was just shutting. So I ended up sleeping in the van, and here I am, back here this morning.
So what sort of books are you looking for?
Well, anything that's kind of clean, not too bad condition. I've got a feeling that they might have taken all the expensive books out of here when they moved. So we're just really looking for books that we think will sell. Philosophy, poetry, novels, maybe some political stuff. Yeah, all sorts.
And a load of bookshelves as well?
Yeah, and a load of bookshelves, yeah, because they're really expensive to buy. They're about 30 quid from IKEA, which is about the cheapest. And yeah, if we can pick up maybe 50 of these over the next week, then that's a saving of £1,500 or something like that.
You're in the money, aren't you?
Yeah, so that's good.
John Roberts.
Where are you from, John?
Bristol.
What have you got so far?
Frank McCourt Tiz. Jacques Lussier LP.
Oh wow, they've got LPs as well.
Yeah, there's a few. Railway Modeler, that's the firm I used to work for many years ago.
I used to have that when I was a kid.
Yeah. Mary Wilson Poems.
Uh-huh.
Michael Palin book. Terry Wogan book. And another Michael Palin. great railway journeys of the world.
So have you got a system? Are you looking for particular books or?
No, just having a browse round really, because you don't know what's, you know, because it's all in, it's just in total chaos and disarray now, and you don't know where anything is. Mind you, I've got hundreds of books at home as well, so I don't really know what I'm doing here.
I've got this box over here.
Oh, yeah.
I really like animals.
Yeah.
I got things like this.
Oh, what's that? Let's have a look. Chinchillas. Do you like chinchillas?
I'm going to do a miniature zoo. So, yeah, I like small, furry little animals, and I like fish as well.
And what do you think of all these books being here for free?
I think it's really cool.
Stephen Morris reporting. Roxanne Escobales and Tim Mabey produced today's edition of Guardian Daily. I'm John Dennis. Thank you for listening.
Guardian Daily. News and reports from around the world.